Your host hasn't seen everything in sports, but sometimes he acts like it, and his guests probably have. Now, the host of Scorecard Scribblings, your sports guy, Brent Weber.
Hey, hello, sports fans. I'm Brent Weber. March 25th, 2020, in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. I don't even comfortably say the words, and here we are. We are thirsting for positivity. We're thirsting for connection to our fellow man and woman. We are thirsting for something sweet like, I don't know, baseball. And so tonight I've asked John Leonidakis to join us. He is a filmmaker, a video producer, film producer, and so on. Has to have a day job, I think, to fuel his, as he says on his website, he has two passions, baseball and music. And tonight we're going to talk baseball with a gentleman who has given us some terrific documentaries to enjoy during this time. John, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you and your audience, Brent. Thanks for having me.
Now, we met at the Sabre event, and so much of your, and you were able to tell us about some of your new experiences. But I want to start with one that I think for documentarians, for people who love to tell stories, particularly about baseball, it takes years. And I want to start with that story that didn't necessarily cover your years, but it covered the years in which a man, the superfan, was pursuing something really odd. In fact, we're going to pull some clips right now, and right now my producer Jared King is going to play a little bit from The Adventures of Superfan.
My name is Charles Frockia Jr. I live in San Francisco. I love the San Francisco Giants, and I love baseball. I fell in love with the 78 Giants, and one day I saw the 79 Media Guide, discounted at 95 cents. I was like, can't get better than that, and so I bought it, and, you know, never thinking that it would, you know, become sort of a 35-year project.
And that 35-year project became your passion, John, just telling that story. Tell us what that project is and how it became the subject of a film for you.
Well, one of the things that one of the missions of my streaming baseball documentary series on Amazon and Vimeo was to explore the human side of our national pastime. And a big part of that, of course, is the lifeblood of baseball, which is fandom. And I happened to meet an amazing fan by the name of Charles Frockia Jr. at one of my screenings in San Francisco about 7 or 8 years ago. And he had shared with me a story that he went on a quest, that he got hold of this 1979 Giants media guide. He fell in love with the team that year. I think he was only about 15 years old. And, you know, he had an opportunity to get it signed by Willie McCovey, like going to a Macy's or somewhere, having a signing. And so he got it signed, and then the thing just took on a life of its own. He said, well, I'm just going to get this thing signed by every coach and every player that appeared. It's about 45 people.
Yeah, right. Who's going to be able to do that?
And this is before the internet.
Yeah.
And this guy, you know, he's mailing this thing all over the country, and people are signing it and getting it back. He's getting it back, and he started it when he was 15 years old, and he was 50 when he was done. So it took him 35 years. Thousands of miles. He you know, went all over the United States getting signatures. He's a really interesting guy, very bright guy, and he had a career in credit card fraud. So when the internet came about and he got this professional skill, he could track anybody down.
Wow.
And it's just a wonderful sort of life story about the things that bring us joy, the power of friendship, the power of baseball. And he had a kind of a fractured childhood. And the Giants and the people he met at Giants games became his surrogate family.
Yeah.
And so it's less of a film about baseball and more of a film about the things that bring us joy and meaning in life. And in this instance, it was baseball and his love of the game.
And he even had to go so far as knock on some doors, right?
He did. He had no compunction. He would just, like, drive to people's houses and knock on the door. And most of the people were sort of, you know, welcoming, even though they looked at him a little askance initially. And Charles, though, has a kind of charm about him, a very sweet and organic charm that wins people over. So it's not surprising that he was successful, because he realized that, you know, he's a very nice person, so he was very, you know, appreciative and very humble when he would make his requests.
And one good part, I guess, about it is I'm sure some of those guys were far enough removed from their days that, you know, they were a little less worried about some crazy fan. When they were playing, they probably would have been more concerned. But at this, they were probably more shocked at times that someone wanted their autograph that bad.
You know, most of them were very approachable and they realized that this is part of their life as a former ball player. And most of them get a lot of autographs through the mail. So it was just a little bit different on how he got to them. It didn't come in an envelope. It was a guy at their door.
Well, I want to talk about several of your things. But the big, I think the connective project for you, and we'll talk about it more as we go on, is the Sweet Spot. And Sweet Spot, A Treasury of Baseball Stories. It's available on Amazon Prime right now, but also on the new, relatively new, the Vimeo channel, where you actually do pay a fee, like you do for Amazon Prime, to get original content. And there is so much on this. It's you talk about the human side of the game, and I think that, as you and I agree, there are so many stories to cover over the history. Some of these must just really be powerful for you to share.
Well, like all baseball fans who love seeing baseball films and old documentaries, I love Ted Williams and Babe Ruth and Willie Mays, but it seemed like the same stories were being covered over and over again, and I really wanted to mine the kinds of stories I was hearing about when I would go to the Baseball Reliquary, which is kind of a left coast version of the Hall of Fame that's based in Southern California, and they look at the human side of the game and people who've impacted the landscape of the game. You know, everyone from Dr. Frank Job to the great slugger Dick Allen to the author and baseball pitcher Jim Bouton. These were all things that sort of tickled my interest, because I'm a storyteller at heart. So it gave me an opportunity to explore those kinds of stories and dig deep into the subculture of baseball and talk to, you know, bat boys, baseball card photographers, coaches, fans, artists, and to get under the veneer of hot dogs and apple pie to explore the subculture of the game, because it's fascinating, and it's not something that's always open to your everyday fan or the everyday public. It's a subculture that is deep and rich. It's, you know, baseball has always been a reflection of American society. It predates the Civil War. So it's a very rich field to mine when it comes to those types of stories. And those are the types of stories I not only explore in The Sweet Spot, but prior to that I made a few films which were sort of, you know, almost feature length. But they were along the same lines, whether I was looking at the Baseball Reliquary or the 1989 World Series game that was stopped by an earthquake, or exploring the legendary sports writer Arnold Hayno. All of those kind of fed into what became this anthology of baseball stories, which is, as you mentioned, The Sweet Spot.
We are going to talk about all of those. In fact, when we come back, we can touch on that day the World Series stopped. We are talking tonight with John Leonidakis, who is executive producer of The Sweet Spot, filmmaker, documentarian, baseball, a music lover, and apparently also a blues musician. When we come back, we're going to talk more with John about some ways that we can pass our time by, well, reliving some important times in baseball history. The Scorecard Scribblings. Don't go away.
So what's Scorecard Scribblings all about?
I was scared for my life at that point. I remember looking to the right and seeing all the medical supplies there, and I'm just thinking, they going to cut off a leg? What are we doing here?
I had a coach that would come up to me on the plane, stick his hand out. I knew what he wanted. Who am I not to give him to him? Like, I thought, okay, job security.
We came to the ballpark every day. We knew we were going to win. It's a great experience, a great feeling to be on a club like that.
Scorecard Scribblings with Brent Weber, Wednesday nights from 6 to 7 on KCNR.
Hi, I'm Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane and Shasta Tanks. Many people may not know that we started a propane tank refurbishing business about 5 years ago. We pick up tanks from various propane companies, bring them to our yard in Anderson, where we blast the old paint and rust off, repaint them with a very durable paint, and then install new valves. The tank is just like a new tank. We primarily sell these tanks in truckloads of 45 to other propane companies. I'm telling you about our new business because many of you are installing generators because of the probability of the power being shut off this summer. Shasta Gas Propane now sells standby generators and propane tanks so that you won't be left without power. Give us a call at 365-3793 so we can come to your house and give you a quote on a generator and tank. Again, that's 365-3793.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that with proper care and just a little discipline should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Second base, so the Oakland A's
The water lines have ruptured. There is no water coming out of the fire hydrant.
There's a gas leak. Oh, turn around here that way.
That is a montage section from the film The Day the World Series Stopped. John Leonidakis joins us now, executive producer of The Sweet Spot, that also his work, that documentary, and something very personal. Last week, Omari P. Gonzalez talked about his experience being a broadcaster during that World Series game when the World Series stopped because of that earthquake, and your experience, well, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I grew up in San Francisco, a lifelong Giants fan, and this was my first opportunity to go to a World Series game with my team. And of course, they're playing the crosstown rival A's, so it was a pretty big deal. And I was already working in business, so I traveled around with a bandoliers of 35-millimeter still film. I also had my dad's VHS camcorder, and I was going to document my experience, all the pageantry and the excitement of going to my first World Series. And then, of course, it takes this incredible left turn into tragedy. You know, a 6.9 earthquake is pretty significant, and, of course, it caused a lot of damage and death in the Bay Area, and it was a very scary time to any of us who lived through that. I would definitely say it's in my top three moments in life where I was really frightened. But because I grew up in the Bay Area, my parents had a home there, even though I had come in from out of town, I was able to, and I'm a freelancer, so I stayed the intervening 10 days, and I covered the story as I could in the downtime, and then I went back to game three, and then I shot some more stuff, and I realized I had a really interesting three-act story to tell from the perspective of a typical baseball fan.
Yeah.
And so I put this film out, and it's not to be confused with the ESPN 30 for 30. Theirs is called The Day the Series Stopped.
Right.
But I think both films complement each other. Theirs is kind of a macro perspective, and mine is a micro perspective. As a matter of fact, they reached out to me when they were making that film to interview me for it, and we couldn't align our schedules for them to interview me. So, but I think the two films complement each other, and it was really a remarkable time to be a Bay Area native and a baseball fan, and it's certainly a day I'll never forget.
And from a baseball standpoint, I mean, for those who weren't around, though I think most of our listeners know of or had experience, I was actually working in a television station in Chattanooga, Tennessee, preparing for the sportscast. So it was, you know, 5-something California time, right, when that happened?
5:04 p.m.
5:04 p.m. So I was back Eastern time, was rolling, 3/4-inch tape, I'm sure, on the game to get highlights, and could not believe what happened. And, of course, we all watched in horror, and thank God it didn't turn out worse. But at the time, well, we weren't sure they were even going to finish that World Series. It's almost an afterthought that the series was a sweep.
Yeah, it was very dicey because, you know, the idea of playing a World Series when you have this massive death and destruction going on, it was bad optics, as they say. And I think Faye Vincent did a really good job saying, hey, we're going to step aside here and we're going to let, you know, life and death get addressed here. And we will resurface at the proper time. So I think Commissioner Vincent was extremely sensitive and played that very, very well. But I will say, by the time, you know, we came back to the World Series 10 days later, it was the perfect time because there had been a certain amount of resolution up to that point. And I think the community really needed the game to start up again. Mm-hmm. It really brought people back together. Because both teams were from the Bay Area and everybody was affected. All of the fans, all of the players, the coaches, the administration, everybody was touched by this thing. So by getting the game, the series restarted, it allowed, you know, the sort of things to kind of rise from the ashes again and to bring some life and spirit and energy back to the community that was badly needed.
I think that would be somewhat of a microcosm to what we are experiencing now. When sports do come back, I think that we're going to enjoy some time outdoors at the ballpark.
Well, that's true, that's why I've been contacting other people in the media and other folks I know who love baseball and miss it. I remind them, hey, you can go and look. The sweet spot is the endless season of baseball. You can go and watch to your heart's content. We've got about 10 hours of stuff on the Vimeo On Demand site, a little bit less on the Amazon Prime, but there's 3 seasons of binge-worthy content, and if you are an Amazon Prime member, you watch for free. The other, the Vimeo channel is, I think it's $1.99, all you can eat,
mm-hmm.
And so you can get a good baseball fix there. And as a matter of fact, I'm working on a new film right now about Lefty Odule and his restaurant in San Francisco, the one that closed up a couple years ago.
Wow, and I'm fascinated to hear that. I definitely I ate there a few times. I mean, who didn't? I worked for CNN, and when you go to San Francisco for anything, we would go to Lefty because it wasn't just that there were incredible archives on the walls and under the glass and everywhere else, you were pretty likely to see somebody in there, too, that was attached to the game.
It was a baseball place. Tom Odule, Lefty's cousin, who I interviewed for the film, was telling me he went in there when the World Series was going on, and he saw the whole umpiring crew there. He said, what are you guys doing here? He says, we come here to eat because this is a baseball place.
Right.
Of course, they were, you know, staying down the street at the hotel there. But it was known. It was very blue-collar. It was very organic. It was not a fancy place. It was kind of a Hofbräu style cafeteria thing, if you will, and it had the bar. It was very, it was a civic institution in San Francisco. I think it opened its doors in 1958. And the place is dripping with San Francisco culture and history and baseball history.
Why did it close?
Oh, they had a disagreement. You know, the landlord wanted to, you know, hike the rent, and, you know, I guess the owners at the time, you know, it wasn't something they could afford, and they kind of went back and forth, and it didn't work out, so they had to leave. And there's a version of it that's reopened, I believe, on Fisherman's Wharf somewhere. You know, it's not what it was, though. It's a very different kind of experience, and I think people who remember the old Lefties and who go to the new one now are bound to be a little bit disappointed, because the other thing was just, you know, dipped in all this lore and culture, and really wasn't replicated. You know, and certainly you're missing the bar. I mean, it was just quintessential San Francisco. Herb Cain, it was one of those places that Herb Cain, the old newspaper guy, would write about. And it was, as I say, it was just an institution.
Well, and in those days, a sign like the signs they had in front, Lefty O'Doul's Restaurant and Piano Bar, Restaurant and Cocktail Lounge, best deal on the square. That was the first thing I was going to ask. What did they do with the bar?
That's a good question. I don't know. But, of course, you know, they made a very special Bloody Mary, and it was so popular that they had their own Bloody Mary mix that they would sell. You know, if you were into alcohol, that place was pretty big. It was a great, they had a great bar there. And as you say, the memorabilia that splashed on the walls there, sort of covering, you know, Lefty's career as not just a baseball player and not just as a manager in the Pacific Coast League, where he was prolific in both, but also as a baseball ambassador going to Japan. He was great friends with Joe DiMaggio. He was Joe DiMaggio's best man when he got married to Marilyn Monroe.
That's right.
So it's got, and a lot of, and you know, he had his old jerseys up on the wall. It was just a fabulous place. And I'm so glad that I was able to interview Tom O'Doul when I did. I think it was near the end of 2016, early 2017. Because about 6 months later, the place was gone. And so we're going to be able to share that with our viewers when the episode is done. You're going to get a really nice feeling of what it was like to go inside that classic restaurant.
That is fantastic. And now, where can people see that film?
Well, that I'm actually working on.
That's
it
the one
right
you're
now.
Working on. I knew that. So, I just blanked on
it. It's in post-production, mm-hmm. and you know, hopefully within a month, I'll have it up there, and I'll send you information about it so you can share it with your listeners.
I'm just trying to keep all of your labors of love straight, and as fellow baseball guys, we you know, these are the things. As I said, I've often told young people getting into either the entertainment industry or the base or sports industry, even into the broadcast industry, I say it's okay to do a job that facilitates your dreams. And you and I talked a little bit about you. If you believe that you've got a documentary in you or a story to tell, don't lose sight of it. And you didn't lose sight of some of these, and you kept your finger in the pie, and you're able to do some of these things, right?
Well, absolutely. I raised in the '60s. I became a storyteller by watching television and going to the movies and buying baseball cards. Every baseball card has a story on it. All you have to do is turn it over and look at the statistics, and of course, comic books and a love of reading. So that was very natural. But the one thing, storytellers, you know, we hunger for great stories. And so I'm sort of, in the years preceding when I really got into the filmmaking of these baseball stories, I began collecting these stories, going to various baseball symposiums and conferences and events by places like the Baseball Reliquary, and just kind of filing them away. And not to mention, of course, you know, being very much fueled by Lawrence Ritter's book, The Glory of Their Times, which is essentially a collection of oral histories of men who played baseball from the end of the 19th century up until about 1945. That sort of collection of oral histories really hit home with me, because I think baseball is somewhat abstract. It can't really be understood or appreciated unless you experience it in some way. Reading about it, of course, is one thing. Of course, hearing it on the radio is great theater for the mind. But when you see and hear these people from baseball talking about their experiences in the world of baseball and sort of tying it to their lives in a way that resonates with everybody. And I have so many people who tell me, I don't even like baseball, but I like these stories you tell because I can relate to them. And then you're really getting somewhere, I think. Now you're starting to go down paths that haven't been explored and people find fascinating.
John Leonidakis is our guest. We're talking about The Sweet Spot and so much more baseball documentary work that is done. When we come back, we will talk about some of his favorites, some of the important stories that you can learn about on The Sweet Spot and in others. And that also includes a very special, I think, relationship you've had with Arnold Hayno. We'll talk about all that stuff when we continue. You're listening to Scorecard Scribblings. I'm Brent Weber. Back in just a moment.
The Reading Civic Auditorium brings a wide variety of shows to the North State. Go to readingcivic.com and join their mailing list for free. Get early access to tickets and first dibs on the best seats in the house. Grab a drink with friends at the fully stocked bar or locally roasted coffee. Snacks and other beverages at the River Rock Cafe. Enjoy lidded beverages throughout the auditorium at every show. If you want to know about the best concerts coming to the North State, go to readingcivic.com to learn more.
The value of banking local comes in being able to walk into the lobby, see the president, and be called by your first name. Knowing that lending decisions are made locally by people you call neighbor or serve alongside when supporting a worthy cause. There's confidence in knowing that when you place your trust in Cornerstone Community Bank, you not only help yourself, you support the town you call home. Stop by one of our Reading or Red Bluff branches or visit us online at bankcornerstone.com. Cornerstone Community Bank. We invite you to experience how we are moving local dreams forward.
Make no payment for up to 120 days. That's 4 months on all new 2020 Kia Sportages, Sorentos, Fortes, Souls, and Optimas. No first payment for 120 days on approval of credit. Ends March 31st, 2020. Reading Kia. ReadingKia.com.
Reading Electric Utility cares about the whole community, and we offer an income-qualified residential energy discount program that can save you up to $400 a year on your energy bill. And once per year, CARES bill credit up to $300. To find out if your income qualifies you for a residential discount program and CARES program, call 339-7200. That number again is 339-7200.
Make no payment for up to 120 days. That's 4 months on all new 2020 Kia Sportages, Sorentos, Fortes, Souls, and Optimas. No first payment for 120 days on approval of credit. Ends March 31st, 2020. Reading Kia. ReadingKia.com.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge, defending your rights as a Christian, a parent, and a citizen. Here's Brad Dickus.
The California Teachers Association is looking to add transgender and binary youth to the students who can leave class without notifying parents for medical reasons. In other words, this means students can pursue gender transition without parents knowing about it. Permission slips are required to engage in extracurricular activities. But when it involves a student's health and well-being, folks, the CTA does not have the best interests of students at heart. In fact, it's their goal to push their agenda on vulnerable children. Please join PGI in prayer for parents and children impacted by this policy.
The Pacific Justice Institute provides legal representation to individuals without charge. Learn more at pacificjustice.org. That's pacificjustice.org.
Crowd, going to the stadium, when you walk in the stadium. I don't know, it just makes me feel happy.
Baseball is a way of life, I think more so than any sport in America.
I love the smell of the grass. I love the feel of the game. I love the pace of the game.
There's something mystical about the game that connects generations and connects parents to kids.
Baseball is a companion. It's not just a game, it's a companion.
I got up to the top of the walkway and looked down on the field. It was all lit up. It looked like it was magic.
Clips from The Sweet Spot, a treasury of baseball stories. And we are joined by John Leonidakis, the executive producer of Sweet Spot. And these stories, so many, as we look at the different types of stories, some of them very simple, interesting, and some of them dig a little bit deeper, social issues, including racism in ways being told that we haven't heard before. As you said, we know the Jackie Robinson story. We even know maybe the Henry Aaron story to a point. We know some of these, but racism, gender bias, you're able to look at some of these and just let history speak for itself through the voices.
Very much so. As I said, you know, baseball has been is a mirror to American society, showing issues of race, labor problems, issues with cheating, of course, which we've just seen. It reflects the good and bad and everything else in between of American culture. And one of the things I wanted to look at for sure was racism. And I'd met Jim Mudcat Grant, the great pitcher of the Minnesota Twins and the Indians and many other teams. Got to know him a little bit and was able to interview him at his home for a better part of a day, which was amazing. But, you know, this was a guy that was raised in the Jim Crow South, was one of the very few starting black pitchers in Major League Baseball in the American League. I think his first season was 59. And it was shocking. You know, he told me that, you know, between 59 and, like, 64, he had a number of white catchers that intentionally sabotaged him, his own teammates. You know, they'd call for the wrong pitch, or they'd actually tell the hitter what was coming. And I had not heard that before. So that was really surprising. And you know, the other thing that I thought was really strange was that American women and girls and women, I mean, they couldn't even play Little League. It was against the Little League rules for them to play until 1974. And they'd be sued so little girls could actually play baseball. And so there was this great learning about how women have been discriminated against, how half of the population, half of the American citizenry have been discouraged from participating in its national pastime, whether it's playing, coaching, or umpiring, which is absurd. And so we dug so deep. We did a whole season. Our third season focuses entirely on that subject. And we interviewed some of the most prolific people who've been involved, women who've been involved in playing the game, as young as age 9 up to the 90s. That would be women who played in the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League that was made famous by Penny Marshall's film, A League of Their Own.
One of my very, very favorites. And then we come to this season where spring training cut short, or would have learned more about the work of Alyssa Nakin, I'm not sure how we pronounce her name, who was hired as the first female coach on a big league staff in Major League Baseball history. And she's working with the kids, the ball players, the men that happen to be there.
That's right. And you know, women have been making inroads in the last few years, specifically in the scouting department. But I believe the assistant general manager of the New York Yankees is a woman.
Right.
There have been some strides being made, but nowhere near enough. And it's pretty embarrassing for Major League Baseball to not have a woman umpiring when the NFL and the NBA have had them at least for the last 2-3 years.
Right.
There's just no excuse. Like, their hearing or their eyesight is defective. It's a huge black eye for baseball.
The chance to, you know, we can't, once some of these stories pass on, when the storytellers pass on, we can't get them back. And so to me, a chance to, you know, experience moments with people like Minnie Minoso, who, you know, my dad knows great stories that he's heard about Minnie Minoso. I've heard things, but for you to be able to tell stories like that, through moments you shared at the Baseball Reliquary are pretty cool too, and big part of this stuff.
Well, we're living in kind of a golden age. No one's really talking about it. I mean, you and I know how many, the volume of baseball books that are being produced is just staggering. that University of Nebraska and McFarland in particular are putting out, let alone the sort of major publishers. And that, you know, there are people who are making films about baseball, not just myself. I mean, every year the Hall of Fame has a baseball film festival. It's been going on for the last 15, 16 years. And I've been amazed at the quality and the variety of stories that are being told. So this is a really exciting time. If you are, like baseball or you like American history or popular culture, there's a lot of material out there. You just have to know where to look for it.
I lived in Southern California for a decade and a half and knew nothing about the baseball reliquary. And that's in, what, Pasadena?
It is. It's a little bit of a tough thing to kind of grasp because there's not a ton of advertising. It's not a brick-and-mortar institution.
Mm-hmm.
They're peripatetic in that they have curated exhibits and events at libraries throughout Los Angeles. So they're a little bit under the radar, but I first found out about them because when they were having their annual Hall of Fame induction ceremony, they call it the Shrine of the Eternals. And there was an article in the LA Times in 2002 saying that Shoeless Joe Jackson, Mark the Bird Fidrich, and Minnie Minoso were going to be inducted in Pasadena, and it was going to be free. I was like, I don't believe this. I've got to go. And when I went, it was astonishing because, of course, Minoso was there. And I had found my tribe. These were all people who were deep, dedicated baseball fans who knew a lot about the game, who knew who Minnie Minoso was. There was a guy there dressed in full 1919 Chicago White Sox regalia. That's how deep this crowd was. But Minoso, I was talking to Minoso about playing in Seals Stadium, you know, in the PCL before he got to the majors. He was as sweet as could be. He spent time with every person who wanted to come up and talk to him. And this happens every year with the baseball reliquary. They've become a little bit more well-known. Mm-hmm. They're a little bit more well-known in sort of popular culture and in baseball circles. But they're very iconoclastic. They love the game besottedly, but not reverentially, and that's one of the things I like about them.
Right. We are speaking with John Leonidakis, and John, you have a beautiful name, and I've probably pronounced it four different ways.
But oh, you're doing good.
Doing my very best. We met at a Sabre event down in Sacramento, and you were one of the featured guests. And even that event, when you talk about meeting your tribe as baseball people, people who love the game of baseball, and I cover other sports here as well, but I think everybody knows that's my jam, as the kids used to say. I still think jiggy with it is hip. So I don't know. I'm way past retro, but it is interesting to bring together diehard baseball fans like that, because you've got over here one guy that's been playing Strat-O-Matic for 60 years, and you've got over here this professor who's writing some treatise that's beyond anything I could even understand. But then you've got people like you and I and sports writers and so on and former ball players, colorfully. Talk about a mixed bag all brought together by those red stitches.
108 magical red stitches. And yeah, it brings together a very eclectic group of people, and they're all, you know, stuck together by a love of a 19th century game with no clock.
I want to ask you a little bit about, and I have not read the whole L.A. Times story. Big fan of the guy who wrote it, by the way.
Well, Bill Plaschke.
Yeah, misreading Plaschke stuff. Using baseball, the tactile and the social and the memorial aspects of the game to help those who struggle with, in this particular case, Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. Tell us about that.
Yeah, another Sabre contingent in South Texas was having a lot of success using baseball reminiscence therapy with people who were memory care patients, tying into nostalgia and storytelling. And they create a forum that's very informal and relaxed and friendly and welcoming. And the idea is to get these patients and the caregivers to talk about their experiences with baseball. Because what happens with some people with memory care issues, they tend to retreat into their shell and they don't connect socially. And in this environment, they're able to do that. And we encourage them to bring in an object, a baseball card, a pendant, what have you, and share the story behind that artifact, that relic. It gets them talking. It gets other people talking. And as you mentioned, we try to engage as many of the senses as possible. And we started out in a discussion format. And then one of the facilitators we work with at Alzheimer's Los Angeles says, hey, what about throwing a ball around? Mm. And so I bought a bucket of plastic balls around, and we threw it around in a circle. So now we're taking it from the theoretical and the discussion out to where we're actually playing a little bit. And then we started to introduce batting practice. Wow. With wiffle balls and wiffle bats. And to see these seniors, we've had people as old as 96 swinging a bat. They said, I haven't swung a bat in 75 years. And they light up like Christmas trees. And to help people who are suffering is an amazing thing. But the fact that we're all talking about something we love, baseball, and these are all people who, you know, they were really into baseball in the post-World War II golden era of the 50s and 60s.
Right.
And those are sort of the things that we'll cover. And we do outings. We go to Dodger games. We've gone to UCLA games. We also do this with the Veterans Administration. It's a magical program.
Terrific. And AlzheimersLA.org, I know you. It's a passion of yours as well, so I want to make sure I mention that. And John Leonidakis is our guest. We're talking the sweet spot. We're talking baseball documentaries. We're talking about ways that the game connects us. And we've got another segment to go, so I appreciate you sticking with us from down in the 818. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the projects going on. And well, we'll just find out what – I can't even find my list now of all our cool, sweet stuff that we're
talking
about.
There's a lot to cover. We got it covered.
There's a lot to cover. We're going to talk more baseball when we come back.
Yeah.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the comfy fit of a favorite pair of jeans and the tried and true performance of a new home comfort system from Rood. So here's to reliability built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance Heating and Air today at 530-221-2642.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
We all had friends and family that were affected by the car fire. Most of the cleanup is done now, and a lot of families are looking at rebuilding. If you relied on a well for your water system, it's important to assess the condition of your well and its capabilities to be able to meet the demands of new construction codes. I'm Ted Ogilvie with Diamond Core Drilling. We've been providing water well systems and pumps in Northern California since 1980. Let us help you with your rebuilding process. That's Diamond Core Drilling, 275-8162.
The Redding Civic Auditorium brings a wide variety of shows to the North State. Go to reddingcivic.com and join their mailing list for free. Get early access to tickets and first dibs on the best seats in the house. Grab a drink with friends at the fully stocked bar or locally roasted coffee. Snacks and other beverages at the River Rock Cafe. Enjoy lidded beverages throughout the auditorium at every show. If you want to know about the best concerts coming to the North State, go to reddingcivic.com to learn more.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
This is a book about a fan in a stadium watching a ball game.
Well, as a writer, A Day in the Bleachers is special because he went to the ball game and it wasn't just enough to go see a World Series game between Cleveland and the New York Giants, but his mind, his writer's mind, was working. And I forget what he said. He took all his scorecard. He was scribbling on other things. But the writer in him, the impulsive, compulsive writer, couldn't help but, you know, watch this game go by. And he's taking and we do it all the time. A writer could do a book on almost any game. Casey Stengel used to say, in every baseball game, you see something you never saw before. Well, you never saw before was Willie Mays going backwards, turning, whirling, throwing the ball. And Haino knew enough that he'd seen an epic event. But probably if Wirtz hadn't hit the ball and Willie hadn't chased it down, the great mind, the reporter, writer mind of Arnold Haino would have found a way to turn, was it a $5 ticket, whatever he paid for, you know, walk in to the World Series, and he would have found a way to turn it into a book or a magazine article somehow.
We're joined right now by John Lanodakis, who's been my guest this hour, executive producer of The Sweet Spot and a documentarian who brought us that story of Arnold Haino, Day in the Bleachers, who turned that simple story of a most memorable moment in Americana, not just in sports, but Americana, Willie Mays' famous catch in Game 1 of the 54 World Series, into a story for the ages. That had to be a fun, fun time for you to talk to him.
He's a remarkable man. He just turned 98. Wow. And, you know, this is a guy who saw 70 games in 1926 as a four-year-old because he lived like two blocks away and his uncle was a cop who had passes that taught him how to cross the street and go to the game. And he was right there on the first baseline because he loved to watch Bill Terry, the last guy to hit 400 in the National League. So Haino is this, he has this Zelig-like life where he's been present at some of the most prolific moments in American history, sports, and popular culture. And I knew about him a little bit, and I did a little bit of research on him, and I said, how has nobody not sat him down in front of a video camera and get him to talk? And that's exactly what I did. I told him, I said, I don't even know what I'm going to do with it. I just know you're an American treasure, and we need to hear your stories while you're still with us. And so he agreed, and it took us 2 years to do the project. And a remarkable man who was not only a great sports writer, he was a great writer. He wrote, you know, for the LA Times, the New York Times. He wrote for TV Guide. He was also a warrior for social justice. He fought racism in Orange County here in Los Angeles in the 1950s when the barbers in his neighborhood wouldn't cut the hair of black people. And he fought Disney trying to put a ski resort in the Angeles National Forest. He wrote about that, and he wrote about a dam project in Texas that was going to mess up the environment, and it got his article in New York Times was cited in a decision by the Supreme Court. So this is a guy that's had a lot of impact on our life here in America, and he was taught a long time ago to look out for the less fortunate. And he doesn't he walks the talk, and he's a remarkable guy, and he taught me a lot about what it means to be a responsible human being and to care about your community, and I learned a lot about writing from him. It was just a remarkable project. It's called Haino, A Century in the Bleachers, and you can find that on Amazon Prime as well as the Vimeo On Demand channel.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Vimeo On Demand channel as well, A Century in the Bleachers, and there's a section there where you tell that, where he tells that story. I think it's about, I don't know if it's a 2.5, you know, maybe a 3-minute section that I watched, Tension and Torment. And that's a little bit of what you're talking about. Tell me specifically about what that story.
Well, that's an outtake.
Right.
And that's only on the Vimeo On Demand channel. And one of the ideas was that we were going to have some of Arnold's best sports writing read by a terrific sports writer named John Shulian.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, John, pick them out. Pick out the ones you like. And Tension and Torment is tied to the 1962 World Series. And Arnold had wrote for a sport magazine for 25 years, and he was a main competitor to Sports Illustrated back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And he was supposed to report on the losing team every game. And Game 7, the Giants lose at San Francisco's Country Park, and he's sitting in the clubhouse with the Giants starting pitcher, Jack Sanford, who just lost a hard luck game 1-0, the seventh game of that World Series. And so we get a sense of what it's like to be Jack Sanford at that time, and then, you know, the teammates come in after they've lost the game, and then finally Sanford goes into the Yankee clubhouse to congratulate the pitcher, the winning pitcher, Ralph Terry, who just 2 years earlier lived in ignominy, giving up a walk-off World Series-ending home run to Bill Mazeroski, and he may have done something similar with Willie McCovey at bat, but of course McCovey made out, but it was really one of the most poignant pieces of writing, sports writing I'd ever seen. And so we took that as an outtake, and we illustrated it with images and so forth. And that's what that's about. We also did something similar where Arnold covered Stan Musial's last day player, and we have that as well.
Yeah, Felipe Alou and the Latin ball player's Bill of Rights. And you also just have some stories that, well, just make you feel good about the game. Let's hear a little bit of this last clip. Jared?
And the big moment of that weekend was when the kids in the neighborhood learned that Monty was staying with us. They demanded that he come out and play with them. So I found an old bat in my house. I gave it to Monty. I said, Monty, would you do me a favor? Would you stand? It was very low tide that particular weekend. Would you stand and hit balls into the ocean, and these kids will retrieve them? He said, I'll do it, he said, but it's awful hot. I said, you played in hotter weather than this.
That Ray Robinson and Arnold Hainaut, and I'm reading from the Vimeo page there, recount a magical beach weekend with Hall of Famer Monty Irvin and the neighborhood kids who unexpectedly showed up to play ball with him. And we're talking about a time when, you know, a black man playing ball with the kids, you know, even in some parts of the country, that still would have been crazy. But this guy was a Hall of Famer. Tell us a little bit about that type of story. That was a feel-good one, right?
Oh, yeah, and that's one of my all-time favorite things. And it's only like 4 minutes or something, but it was an outtake from the Hainaut piece because Hainaut had a bunch of these home movies that he shot in 16mm that I was going to use for the film. I'm looking through it all. I said, who's this guy, this black guy wearing a T-shirt that says Sports Illustrated? He goes, oh, that's Monty Irvin. I said, what do you mean that's Monty Irvin? You kidding me? Oh, and they told me the story. They took this trip to Fire Island one weekend, and they were all together. The neighborhood kids found out that Monty Irvin was in. Now, Monty Irvin had been retired by then. This is 1963 or something. Mm-hmm. And they pounded on the door and said, we want him to come out and play with us. And so, you know, so Hano's got this footage of Monty playing catch with kids and hitting these fungos that are 400 feet in the air. And he's got these gloves the size of their heads, these kids trying to catch this thing. It is a marvelous, sweet story that is timeless, and it is touching. It raises the It gives people goosebumps when they watch it. It's just, again, it's the magic of baseball, and you said it so well. We're really exploring ways that the game connects us all, a 60-year-old black man and a bunch of 8-year-old white kids on Fire Island.
John Leonidakis, been a real pleasure to chat with you. Tell us again about where folks, we've been talking about it, but I want them to be able to enjoy this in this period of absence of sports. We want to be able to tell them where they can catch all this action.
Sure. On Amazon Prime, you can watch The Sweet Spot, 3 seasons there, but also on Amazon Prime is Hainaut, A Century in the Bleachers, and The Adventures of Superfan, which I just finished in December. And then you can also go to Vimeo On Demand, and I think it's Vimeo On Demand / The Sweet Spot. And that has even more content in it. It features the Monty Irvin story and the other Arnold Hano piece you mentioned. And that's $1.99 a month, all you can eat. And then, of course, you can find us on the web at thesweetspot.tv, and we're on Facebook and Twitter.
John Leonidakis, thanks so much. We'll talk some more baseball down the road. This is Scorecard Scribblings. Thanks to my producer, Jared King. Thank you for tuning in. Go to scorecardscribblings.com for more.